Welcome back to Not a Single Bother podcast with me, Aislinn Dowling. Hope everyone is well. Hope everyone's having a lovely week so far. I am really excited about this week's episode, the guest that I have on. There was a bit of trouble now getting there. I had arranged to speak with him on whatever day it was. Anyways, I was ready to rock at what initially like had been planned as being 6 p.m. here. Like the time was 7 a.m. Ireland. So last week when I organized it, it was 7 a.m. Irish time. So I was like, right, grand, that's 6 p.m. 6 p.m. Australia time. Perfect. Ready to go. Home from work. Ate the dinner. had loads of time, like. And I sat down and I was ready. I'd sent the link and everything for the Zoom. And it was 7 a.m. on the dot. What I thought was 7 a.m. on the dot. And I was just like, wait, oh my God, do I have the right time? I'm just going to check. Checked my clock app on the phone and saw it was 8 o'clock in Ireland. And I was like, oh, I'm an hour late for my Killeely Ray. Like, and he also didn't even say a word. Didn't ring, didn't check where I was, didn't say hello, where are you? The clocks had changed in Ireland on this Sunday, and they hadn't changed here. They don't change here until this Sunday. So I just didn't realize, like, I didn't know that the clocks had changed. Anyways, I rang him and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Thanks be to God, he's an absolute legend and nothing phases him. Absolutely nothing phases him. So we just reschedule it for the next day. And I loved it. Like, he's just some crack. He's a character, like, whatever about the political views or, you know, whether you agree with them or not, or whether he's your cup of tea or not in relation to politics, you can't deny that this man is a character and a half. Like, he is a bit of entertainment, he's good crack, and he seems like a genuinely nice person as well. So I absolutely loved chatting with him, and I can't wait for you to hear the episode. Also, for the first time ever, I have finally decided to upload the video versions of the podcast onto YouTube. So I've set myself up a YouTube channel, and I will be uploading the video version of this interview as the first one onto my YouTube channel. And I hope to continue to do that for all the rest of the interviews, hoping that there's no like massive technical issues with the video. But yeah, I said, why not, lads? And before I get into the episode, I just want to remind people of my Ko-fi account that I have set up. That is just a way of supporting my podcast and supporting my content. And basically, it's just if you want to buy me a coffee by supporting... No, if you want to support my podcast and my content by buying me a coffee, the link is in the description of the episode and the link is in the description of the podcast itself. It's obviously completely optional. You can do it once off, you can do it monthly, or you can just completely ignore it and keep listening for free. That is fine. I just said I would leave the option there because why not? This episode is proudly sponsored by St. Patrick's Irish Bar in Valencia, Spain. So if you're looking to get away for a city break, but also possibly top up your tan by the beach, then look no further than Valencia, which was voted best city to live in the world for expats. There are two sister bars to choose from, St. Pat's Scholars Bar and the original St. Patrick's Pub, the home of crack in Valencia. If you're travelling from any part of the world, make sure to pop in for guaranteed crack with live music every night and fun events throughout the week. You will arrive as a customer but leave as a friend. It is their passion to ensure their customers experience an authentic taste of Irish tradition and culture when they walk through the doors and leave with not just a smile on their faces, but memories of a great experience. Valencia is just a 1 hour drive from Alicante Airport, so make sure to take a trip to St. Patrick's in Valencia when you're away on your travels. There are direct flights to and from Dublin, Belfast, London, Glasgow, and many other cities. So thank you so much to St. Patrick's in Valencia for sponsoring this podcast, and check them out on Instagram and the rest of their socials to keep up to date with all the crack. As always, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Michael Killeely-Ray, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much, Aislinn, for having me with you. I appreciate it.
Firstly, I suppose just tell us a bit about yourself. Now, I know most people will know who you are, but I just want to know how you would describe yourself in a nutshell for the very few that might not know who you are.
Do not. That's a tough question because sometimes I don't know. Do I know myself? I suppose what I try to do is I try to give a political representation that is down to earth, that is honest, that is factual. If I hear the people that work with me, if I can help people, and if I can do something to improve their lot, I like to do that. I like to see people get on in life. I like to see young people, which would be of interest to you maybe and many of your listeners. There's an awful difference between wanting to travel and having to travel. There's an awful difference between wanting the experience of working abroad and having to work abroad. I hate to think of people saying to themselves, like we had an awful lot of it during the 1980s, for example, or go back another step to the 50s when all my own aunts and uncles had to leave because there was absolutely nothing for them in Ireland. And if people make a choice, if there's job opportunities for them here or abroad, and if they make the choice that, well, we'll go abroad, that's very nice, that's great, that's lovely. But forced immigration is not good.
Definitely not, no. And I feel like it is. I did leave Ireland initially just because I wanted to travel, but now as the years are going by, I'm thinking Ireland isn't appealing to me at this current moment to come back to with regards to rent prices and different things like that. Do you know what I mean? So,
Yes.
yeah. But going back to yourself and how you first started off with politics, like obviously politics is massive in your family, from your father to your brother, yourself, and now even your kids. But what was it like growing up with your father, Jackie, in politics?
Well, whenever I'm asked that question, I always give the unusual answer that nothing personal against anybody, but when I used to hear about a TD dying, I'd be delighted because when a TD used to die, it meant there'd be a by-election. If there was a by-election, my father would be involved in fighting that by-election wherever it was in the country. I was in the national school at that time, and of course, it meant 2 or 3 weeks off of school. And no, I didn't go to any type of university or anything like that, but I suppose going to by-elections and working in those by-elections, it wasn't as though it was a DOS or you were off of school and that you would have a great time. It was working, it was doing the donkey work that's involved in elections as a young fellow would be put at it, putting up posters, giving out leaflets, doing what needs to be done, the ordinary day-to-day work that's involved in a campaign. I learned an awful lot during those campaigns. A lot of interesting things happened. I remember we were involved in by-elections that we won and that we lost. And it's like a football game. You can't win every game. And it got you used to what defeat was like as well. Because every time an election is won, well, somebody else is on the losing end. And all that's an educational curve that you can't buy in any school or in any university. And seeing people's different organizational skills, my father was a great organizer, he was a great motivator, he was a great person to get people to give their best and give their most. I subsequently directed his Dáil election campaigns, which meant that I got to work with a great group of genuine people who were genuinely committed to supporting what he believed in and subsequently what I believed in.
And when did you first realize that you wanted to get into politics? Like, how old were you, and what was it exactly that appealed to you about it?
Well, I always tell this story about how it was decided that I should run for the council myself was, you see, when my father became a TD, he was also still a county councillor because there was this thing at that time, the dual mandate. You could be both. You could be a local politician and a national politician at the same time. So an election was coming up in the offing, a council election. And we were doing a clinic one night, myself and my father, back in Larock to assist and down us all that direction. And we had a great man who used to canvass with us locally in the back of the car, Joe Riney. And Joe said during the course of our travels that night, well, sure, Michael, you'll have to run for the council in the Killarglen electoral area. And I like it actually hadn't occurred to me that I would have to do this. And I said, Joe, why do I have to? And he said, well, sure, the people voted for her father for the Dáil, and are you now going to tell them that they can't vote for a Healy Ray because there's going to be no Healy Ray on the ballot paper in the Clarglen electoral area, which encompassed, you know, Kemare, Sneem, Kesselcove, Cahardanna, down into Waterford, Carrisavine, South Kerry, all that area. And so it was actually Joe Riney that made up our minds that night, because myself and my father discussed it when Joe got out of the car, and he said, were you listening to what Joe said? And I said, I was, very closely. And I said, he's making a point. So it was a sort of a natural realisation that if we were going to consolidate on the Dáil seat and give local and national representation, that it was important to try and spread the evenness of the work and delivery that we would be doing to people and trying to help people in all areas.
Yeah. And how old were you at that age?
It's over 20 years ago. Maybe early 30s, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Late 20s, early 30s, yeah.
And you, I heard you once said to Lucy Kennedy that if there was an award for the worst dad ever when your kids were growing up, that you would win it. What makes you say that? Yes.
Well, I suppose what I mean by that is, mm-hmm. I never let on to be something that I'm not. And you know the way there's very, very good fathers there now. What I mean by that is that they're very attentive, mm-hmm. and that they're sort of there for everything. Well, I suppose the best way to describe it is I was always somewhere else for everything. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you'd often hear people saying, well, you know, if I had to make a choice between being at home to do such a thing or work, oh, well, I'd always choose being at home and all that. Well, no, I don't tell lies. I would be the exact opposite. We'll say, in order of priority, my first job was watching my father's back. In other words, if there was meetings that he would be asked to attend and couldn't go, I would go. Mm-hmm. If his ears were needed in a place, I was his ears to be in that place. Whether it was north, east, south, west, or mid Kerry, I was at everything. Mm-hmm. And if there was an envelope being opened, I'd be there standing there representing him. And at that time, you see, he would have been supporting governments. And each time there was a vote called, there was no such thing as, well, he didn't have to be in the Dáil for a vote. He had to be there for every single solitary vote. Mm-hmm. And so it was very time consuming. And I had, in my opinion, I had no choice. I had to do the job properly. Yeah. So I wouldn't have been the best, we'll say, for all the attentive things that are needed at home. Mm-hmm. So being blunt about it, I would not have been at home. Yeah. So that's just a fact.
Which must have been tough, though, because there's five kids, isn't there? So Eileen must have been, your wife Eileen must have been flat to the mat.
Well, yeah, but like, look, I suppose that comes with having patience and
exactly.
and understanding that, well, like, this is it. And then, of course, when I became a councillor myself, I only barely got elected,
yeah.
and I wanted to grow on that, and I wanted to give a representation. I asked the people at that time to please give me a chance, and that they could have me that time then and sack me the next time if they wanted to. And in other words, if I wasn't up to the grade, just give me an opportunity now, which was that time, and then get rid of me at a future date. And I worked as good as I could, and I'd like to think that I became a good politician for them in all parts of that area and beyond,
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't stop at the boundaries. In other words, if I could help a person in any part of Kerry when I was on Kerry County Council, I didn't ever say to a person, oh, well, you're not in my electoral area, do yeah. you know, I don't need to help you at all. Yeah. I didn't care if a person was from Sneem or from Timbuktu. If I could help them, I would, do yeah. you know, or yeah. try to help them.
Mm-hmm. Your wife Eileen runs a shop in Kilgarvan. So how did yourself and Eileen meet? And did she have any idea what she was getting herself into when she was marrying a politician and going into a politician's family?
Well, I suppose, look, you know, when anybody starts out with anyone else, do they ever know where they're going?
No.
Sometimes we barely know where we're coming from, not a mind where we're going. And things evolve, and yeah. Sure, that's it, you know.
Yeah.
You can do nothing about it, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. You're a busy, busy man. Everybody knows that. And you're always, people are calling you, people are ringing you, asking you for favors. But are you able to switch off and put the phone away when you need to? Or do you find it hard to switch off?
No, I don't ever turn off the phone, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I feel when you're involved in politics and when you're involved in public representation, I actually don't believe that you have the right to turn off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because what about if somebody needs you? What about if there's trouble? What about if somebody urgently needs your advice? And I'll tell this quick story, which will let you know how important it is not to turn off your phone. One night, I don't sleep too much as a rule, but I had come in home and I was sitting on my chair by the stove, and my son happened to be asleep on the couch, and my phone rang, and it was 20 to 2, and whatever, when immediately when I answered the phone, I just, there was something about it. And this man said hello, and there was no missing, there was no nonsense, because sometimes you do get people that might be out with friends and they'd ring, you know,
mm-hmm.
not out of regarding or anything, but they'd ring just saying, oh, we'll ring your man type of a thing, and they might have a little drink or two and more. But this man, it was a very cold, calculating hello, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I said hello there, and I didn't ask him his name, and something made me not ask him his name, and I said, how are you? And he said, not too good. And I said, why? And he said, well, I tried the Samaritans, he said, and there was no reply. And to be honest, he said, if you didn't answer the phone, that was it. And jeez. I said, how do you mean that was it? And he said, well, I have a gun here, he said. And to be honest, he said, I can't stick this anymore, he said. So right away, I know a lot about guns. So I said to him, all right, I said, and I was very matter of fact, what type of gun is it at all, I said. And he told me the type of gun it was. And the minute he told me the type of gun it was, it told me that he wasn't a fella, you know, just making this up, oh, I'm here with a gun, like, he did have a gun. So I said, all right, I said, is the old catch on or off? And he said, it's off. And I said, well, you know, we'll talk away now, I said, but you know, would you just do me one small favour? And I didn't tell him put the gun away. I said, would you just put the catch the other way now, I said. And not only did I know that he did it, I heard the click when he put the catch on the other way. So we talked, and I suppose we definitely talked for over an hour. And two things that I didn't ask him. I didn't ask him his name. I did say, are you in Kerry? And he said, I am. And I said, you're in a rural area, are you? And he said, I am. And he was in the house on his own. And we talked about every aspect of life and lots of different things. And do you know, he was actually a lovely man, a mm-hmm. terrible, nice, sound man. And when we were coming towards the end of our conversation, I said, I'm going to ask you one thing now. Do you promise me, I said, that you won't kill yourself tonight? And he said, I do. He said, he was very matter of fact about it. He said, you know, I enjoyed our talk. And you see, what I kept emphasizing to him was the dawning of a new day is a great thing. And if you can live until morning, that morning, it could hold great things. The weather might be nice. I had said simple things to him. Like I said, you know, like tomorrow now, when the new day will come, do not eat something that you like eating, do not
yeah.
ring people that you might like to talk to, go somewhere that you might like to look at something. If there's a job that you might like to do, do it tomorrow. And when we finished up anyway, the one thing I asked him was, do you promise me and swear that you won't kill yourself for the immediate future? And he promised me. And I said, because I said, you do know you'll be letting me down. And he said, how do you mean I'll be letting you down? Well, I said, people don't shoot themselves in Kerry every day. And if you'll shoot yourself, I haven't asked you who you are, or I'm not asking you who you are. But I'll know that you will die in the next 24 hours because I'll hear it. And I'll say, oh my God, that was the man. And I said, he knew that I had already lost a person one time before through political inexperience and not being good enough at my job. And I lost a man that I always felt I could have helped more. And so anyway, we parted on very good terms, and he guaranteed me that he wouldn't kill himself. And when I put off the phone, I suppose maybe I took a bit of a breath, and I was, that was a bit severe, like. And all of a sudden, my son opened his eyes. He was on the couch, and we should remember now at that time of the night, there was no other noise in the house. There was no radio in the background. There was no television. Hadn't my son heard the conversation, we'll say, my side of it. He couldn't hear every word that the man had said. But my son said, oh my God, he said, like, I said, how much of that did you hear? He said, the phone ringing woke me, but I didn't open my eyes. And he said, you weren't into the conversation for a minute, he said, when I realized what was happening. And so you might say, why did I tell you that story? The reason I told you that story is because you asked me, do I turn off my phone? Could you imagine if I was selfish and when I got him in, if I was to say, all right, I must turn off my phone or put my phone on silent because I don't want to be disturbed. Like, that's, can you see how outrageous a thing that would be?
Yeah.
If for the rest of my life, if I kept the phone on every night and if it never again rang, wasn't it worth having that habit for that night?
Yeah.
Because if that man, remember what he said to me, I rang the Samaritans, I reached out, he said, and no one answered. And you must be there to answer. And fine, you can have childish nonsense, you can have people who are missing,
yeah,
a group of friends out and saying, oh, we'll blighard this fella, people that mightn't like me, which happens a lot. You have people ringing up and, saying dirty things, and but look, that's all part of it too. And I'd have a word for those people as well, that if people like that think that they get to somebody like me by doing foolish things, I actually should have kept it. I got a postcard yesterday, and if I had it here now, I would actually show it to you. I mightn't read it to you, but I would have shown it to you. But I know I dumped it yesterday.
Was it bad?
It was horrendous, like horrendous. And the language, and exactly what type of a person I was and all this.
Oh,
and but like, I was laughing at it. And the reason I was laughing at it was because the person that sent that, they honestly thought that they would upset me by sending me a stupid postcard with dirty stuff written on it. And like, only that I'm too polite. If the person was able to see this podcast, I'd love to tell them what to do with their next postcard.
They're obviously just very unhappy in themselves. But phone calls like that, I mean, like, that must be severe pressure. Like, you must feel severe pressure receiving calls like that, because I know, as you said yourself, that's not the first kind of, it's not the first phone call you've had like that.
No, it's not, but I'd hope that I'd learn. In politics, you usually get people that like to give the impression that they do things right all the time, and that, I'm always right type of thing. Well, I'm not. And like I say, I made a boo-boo one time, and it didn't end up too well. And, you'd always regret that, but you'd try to make up for that then by being better the next time.
Yeah.
And I suppose you the one thing that you get to know and to understand and to learn is that no one of us is perfect. I'm definitely not perfect.
Yeah.
And I suppose all a person can always do is try to be there for people, because life has gone to the stage now that people are under a lot of different pressures. And it's amazing, people talk about young people being in trouble, when say with their heads, older people too, like,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that older people are calling off as well, that's very worrying. I gave many years on the psychiatric services committee. I'd like to think that I learned a lot at that time. It was on the old Southern Hill Board, and you could wake up tomorrow and you could have a sore back and a sore arm, or you could wake up tomorrow, as I tried to politely put it, with from the neck up trouble. And like, you know, well, it's just a pleasant way of putting it, because to me, there's no difference if you have trouble with your head or if you have trouble with the rest of your body. That's all part of it, like, you know. And you just have to be willing to accept that and to start to say, right, I must do my best now and get on with my lot in life. And I think each one of us have to try and help each other, you know.
Yeah. And especially with that aspect of the job, does the job ever get too overwhelming and stressful? Like, are there ever times when you just feel like this is just too much for me?
No, isn't it funny? And it's an unusual thing to say. I do well with stress. I can handle, you know, I can go from one problem to the next and from one calamity to the next. And, you know, if there's things going wrong and if the whole world seems like it's falling in on top of me with this and with that and with the other thing, it doesn't actually rattle me too much.
Right.
And I am a human being somewhere inside, maybe, but it's very, very deep inside. Like, you know, you'll be at it a long time to find it. And so I start to just get on with it. And but how I think I do that is all of the other stuff, which I would consider and call small stuff, if you know what I mean by that. Like, things that might bother other people don't bother me in the slightest.
Right.
The day-to-day tribulations that happen, that people might lose their lives over. You know, when I hear, you know, a person being upset over something small, like, those are the things that I block out completely. I take no notice of them. And like, it has to be a big, serious problem for me to actually say, God, I'm worried about that. You know?
Likewise. Give me an example of something now that was.
Well, you mean the small things? I mean, like, the small things to me are like, if we had a nice shiny car and if we scrub the side of it, like, you know, the way somebody else could be, oh my God, they'd lashed over it. Like, I'd only laugh at things like that, because they mean nothing and they're small things, like, and they don't matter, you know? And like, if something, I don't know, something silly, something minor, all of these things are, they mean nothing. They are nothing. In the greater equation of life, they mean nothing.
Yeah.
They're just tribulations. Mm-hmm. But it's the serious problems. It's the, when people come to me and if they have illness, and if they have issues like that, those are what I call problems.
Yeah.
And these are things that you need to overcome. And recently now, just freshly in my head, so obviously I won't even give the correct age, but we'll say it's a youngish person, a teenager in a part of Ireland that has recently become permanently disabled through an accident.
Okay.
So that person, that family, they have life altering changes.
Mm-hmm.
So from a housing, medical care, future educational needs, their whole life has been turned upside down just by 1 second of an accident. So I'm trying to help those people now and help them get on with the problems that they'll have. And like, how would I put it? That to me now, that's serious.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what you have to keep your head free for. And don't be wasting your mind space with small, trivial stuff. Keep your main focus on those bigger issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that families like that will need every bit of help, that not just one person, but all the different agencies in the state will have to be there to help and provide assistance with. So that's the big stuff, if we're not in it.
Yeah. And what would you say has been your biggest mistake or regret, we'll say, over the years?
You know, smart people say that youth is wasted on the young, right? it's a stupid thing to say, because you can't do it, but I still can't stop myself from saying it. Is if I could go back to when I was younger, I do everything differently. And I suppose, and in fact, I probably do the same in other ways. In other words, the most valuable thing in the whole world, it's not money, it's not possessions, it's the one thing that you can't buy, and that's time. So I always encourage people. I go to schools a lot, national schools, secondary schools, but I say this to young people in national schools, but I reinforce it big time in secondary schools, and that is about wasting time. And again, it's politically probably incorrect to say this to young people especially, but I say it to them anyway, about sleeping, that they should train themselves to try and always manage with as little sleep as they can possibly get away with, and not make themselves sick. And what I mean by that is, and I'm not talking about being a drudge working or like anything like that. Of course, work is terrible, terrible important. But what I'm talking about is not wasting time. So I mean, every minute that you give with your eyes closed, like that is actually a minute wasted. Because sure, when your eyes are closed, you don't know what's happening around you. You can't do the things you might like doing or not like doing. You're wasting time. Okay, I know you have to charge your battery as such, but like, there's no need to have it overcharged and overcooked. Like, you know, the bare charge will keep you going. Your phone will operate even if there's only one bar of power on it, but it doesn't have to have 5 bars on it all the time. So I think some of the times I might have be operating on half a bar, but like half a bar will still make the call. So it's the same way with the human body. And so my biggest regret, if I could go back, of course I do think smarter. I took a lot of chances and risks when I was starting out. I did things that maybe youngsters now can't do because they won't flipping well be given the opportunity by banks, which we won't even get into that because young people are being denied opportunities by lending institutions because they won't give them money, they won't take a chance in them, they won't take a risk with them. And to me, that's what banking is all about. And I was fortunate in that I did have people that were willing to take a chance on me. And but I like everyone in life, I would do a million things differently if I had a second chance. But sure, how do you all know? Maybe we are going to be born again in some other different way, and you know, we'll come back as a
Exactly.
golden retriever called Rex or something like that, and we'll have a great time. So,
So exactly, who's to know? Who's to know?
who's to know? Yeah.
So you're obviously always very busy. I think everyone knows that. But what's a typical day like for you? Like today now, what are you doing now for today? From morning to
Well,
night?
I'm here in agricultural house, which is where my office is. And today is a Dáil day, so it's a Dublin day. So my time is divided between Dublin and Kerry. Things like I like going places where I can go in a car. Everybody knows I don't like airplanes. I don't like travel. You're many miles from home now where you are, and a lot of people of your friends, you all traveled. Like, I know unless I'm drugged, knocked out, and put in a box and taken to Australia, for example, I will never see Australia because I would not, unless Australia moves nearer to Ireland, I won't be seeing it in my lifetime.
You won't be
And
coming to
so
visit me, so I have a spare room here and everything like.
No, you're lovely and everything, but I'm afraid unless you come here, I won't be going there. No, I don't like. I've been to America, all right, but like it would all be on an absolute needs basis. So I like the routine of work. I then outside of politics, I like ordinary work. Like what I mean by that is like putting on a pair of Wellingtons or a pair of boots and going away, whether it's driving a digger or just doing ordinary work. Like everybody knows, I like that. And once I'm busy, like whether it doesn't matter, whether, like I say, whether it is driving machinery, whether it was operating a shovel or a chainsaw, or like, you know, there was a very good friend of mine, Gerry O'Donoghue, who a great teacher. And I remember one day he was after giving out to me at school, and he said, Michael, are you going to make your living by the pick or the pin? And so I suppose the way I'd like to put it is I do both. I like the pick and I like the pin.
Yeah.
And the two diversities of life. Like, I'm not a person for putting on a suit, you know, every day, and that I like a suit. Like, we'll say when I was growing up, if you told me that part of my future life would be putting on a suit every day, I would have said, you're mad, because I couldn't have envisaged that. But like every young person, sure, nobody knows what life holds for them.
Mm-hmm.
But my encouragement to everybody would be, whether they're in Ireland or abroad, like, use every hour of every day, because this is not a practice run.
Yeah.
This is not a testing of the waters. Like, from 0 to 100, I have a friend, all right, who's his next birthday, he'll be 108, and he's in great form, Michael O'Connor, but I don't think many of us will live to be, over the 100. So you should use all the time in the best way you can, because time is the real precious thing, because mm-hmm. you can't buy it, you can't make it, you can't earn it. You only have whatever time God is going to give you. And so that's the answer to that.
And well, my next question was going to be, what do you do to unwind and chill out or do for fun? So I'm going to presume from that answer that you enjoy being out in the farm and you enjoy working. Like, you're not really a man to sit down.
Yeah, like if you see me doing some job that somebody else might consider to be working, like, that's my golf course.
Right.
Like, I nothing in the world against people who do those sort of things. How would I put it? That, like, people who, you know, like, go on a holiday like that, that to me would be actually a waste of time. Like, I like doing ordinary jobs, and that's me having my holiday.
Right.
But if I know it's an old cliche and an old sort of a thing, if you find something you like doing, you'll never work a day the rest of the days of your life. Like, I like what I'm doing, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's here in the office, whether I'm at home helping out in the shop, whether if I'm driving a digger, if I'm working in construction, if I'm doing anything like that, whatever will put me at, I'm quite happy. Like, mm-hmm. if I was told, get out of this building this minute and get a brush and go out brushing the yard outside, like, I would actually be quite happy brushing the yard. And, like, everybody knows that's the truth. That's mm-hmm. me. I just like doing something all the time. Mm-hmm. Once it's productive and once I can see some class of a good result at the end of it, I'm quite happy.
Jeez, I wish I was more like you, honestly. Well, what? Tell me.
I don't know.
What is something about you that we don't know that people would be surprised to find out?
I suppose there's nothing really about me that people don't know.
You're an open book.
I'm a sort of an open book. I don't hide anything.
Mm.
We'll say, educationally, I would have found things difficult when I was growing up because I couldn't read or write.
Right,
and
okay.
And I had a lot of problems with that. And there's a great sense of satisfaction when you overcome it. It was a nun by the name of Sister Regina in Killarney. She's still alive. She taught me how to read and write. We'll call it later in the time. In other words, I would have been very far behind with all that sort of stuff. And but I was delighted one day when we were sort of being introduced to each other, and we were after having lots of conversations, and she told me that I did have a brain. I was delighted to hear that. and because I was starting to have my doubts. And she described it in a lovely way. She said, your mind is full of small locks. And she said, not only do I have to get a key for each lock, but I have to make the keys. And she said, as I will open it up, she said, you will see that you actually do have a good mind. And she seemed to believe in my thought process and my way of analysing things. And when I go to schools now, and when I meet children that have, we'll say, I'll always spot right away the child who has the SNA, the special needs assistant, because it's obvious there's, you know, an adult person sitting with this younger person. But I always try to engage with those people, because, my God, what I see when I talk to people like that, And we'll word it this way. When I'm talking to the special child in the class, I can see why the child is special, because I don't see the disability, I see the ability. I remember one time I was chairman of a Oireachtas committee, and in the course of that, every week I would be meeting ambassadors from around Europe. But I remember one time taking an ambassador to visit Kerry and subsequently to a school. And there was a special boy in the class, and the ambassador had brought a couple of gifts, and he was going to ask a few questions. Sure, every question that he asked, the person, we'll call it, that was the special person, was answering every question. And so I had a little discussion afterwards with the person taking care of him. Sure, what was wrong with the boy? Was the boy was a genius, and he was supposed to be the person in the class that had, we'll say, special needs and requirements. He was an absolute genius. And whatever that child will do for the rest of his life, I don't know how he'll get on, because what's wrong with him is his brain is better than everyone else's, and he's better than everyone else. And it's just trying to contain that monster that's inside his mind, which makes him maybe appear as though, we'll call it, and I mean this with a question mark, something wrong with him. What's wrong with him is there something right with him? And that type of stuff is like he's bordering on genius ability. And so, like, people who might have trouble with the ordinary functioning of life, the reason they do so is because their mind is operating at a different level, and they're thinking differently, their thought process is different to everybody else. So an awful lot of the time, that's what's actually wrong with people who need extra assistance with education and things like that. So I'd like to think that young people get the early diagnosis, which they don't in Ireland, because of lack of services. But I'd like to see children who have learning difficulties being diagnosed early, because if you don't know what the problem is, you can't find the solution for it.
I think that's a great example, though, for people who, struggle with reading and writing, and to show that, like, here you are now, like, as a TD, and you struggle with reading and writing, and it doesn't mean anything. Like, you can obviously go to even higher places, even if you're struggling in school.
Or you can, like, sure, I mean, look at some of the business people you have in the world. Their educational background might be minimal, and like some of the people who I would know that would be what we call very successful, what they always say to me is that, oh, yeah, sure, we didn't have time for education because we were too busy working and doing the things that made them successful. And like, don't get me wrong, no, I'm not knocking education. I'm a great admirer of education, quite simply because I didn't probably avail of it enough myself. I didn't do a leaving certificate, and but I obviously love to see other people do it. I love to see people going to university, quite simply because I didn't get to do it myself. I love to see people getting degrees and all that sort of thing, again, because I didn't do it. And I admire people who do that. And I get satisfaction out of people doing things that I didn't do, because I think, isn't that great, you know? And I like that. So I never ever would anybody, say, oh, I'm a knocker on the education, and start to say, oh, that's a waste of time. But I would say one thing. There are people in life who it is a waste of time for them to get too involved in the educational system, because they might be happier and they might be more successful staying away from it.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you have certain flair or ability, I'll use the example. Say that you're a young boy or girl and you're a great mechanic and you have a great mechanical mind, and that your thing is fixing things. Well, for you maybe to give years inside in a class learning about things that you'll never use, that will never be of any assistance to you, you might be better off do at that time out working, doing the work that God gave you the mindset for. And so, like, again, coming back to the thing about time being such a finite thing, you might be better off sometimes just going far and doing what you like doing, and don't waste your time doing things that you see no benefit in.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, the school system isn't always for everyone. Like, especially if you're more creative, if you're more physical like that, like a mechanic or a welder or a plumber or whatever it might be. Like, there's different routes to go, we'll say.
Yes.
So I got in a few questions now as well from people who follow me on Instagram. So I'm going to ask their questions. They wanted to ask you a few questions. So first question is, what is Leo Varadkar's most fairy-like quality?
Oh, God. That's a politically incorrect question. I like being positive about everybody. We'll talk about the good qualities that people have. Any person that goes into politics, in my opinion, they go into it for what they believe to be the right reasons. We can sometimes have disagreement with people because they think that their way is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And their way might actually be a way that you have disagreements with. At present, we have a government who are made up of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens. Now, you often heard of the tail wagging the dog. Well, at this stage, the tail has shook the life out of the dog. In other words, the dog being Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, the tail being the Greens.
Right.
Now, I've nothing in the world against the Green agenda, nothing. I'm not a climate change denier, that absolutely not. I believe that the real environmentalists in Ireland and the world are the people who own it. In other words, the farmers, the people who own farmland, the people who own forestry. They're the people, they want to keep our waterways clean. They want to improve their land. They want to make a living from the land. Land is a living, usable source that you have to, you're given it. You don't own it. Land is not a possession. You're a custodian of it to pass, because I never saw yet a person going and taking their land into the grave with them. You know, you do have to leave it after your life.
Yes.
And so you're only using it for your time and pass it on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to the whole carbon reduction issue, like, Ireland at present is being asked by our politicians to do what I don't want to say impossible things, but what we're being asked to go very fast in a very short length of time, going from where we are now to a massive reduction in our carbon emissions. Now, in doing so, they're doing very hurtful things to people who are trying to live today, older people, young, struggling families. I mean, we're crippled with inflation here at the moment. And at the same time, the government are hell-bent on putting in more carbon taxes in the month of May. I mean, forcing people through carbon taxes to change the way they live is not the right way to go. There are sensible, practical measures that we can take that don't mean, with regard to protecting our environment, which don't mean taxing the living daylights out of people. People are terrorized at the moment. Like, and our government are telling everybody, use more electricity, change from, solid fuels to electric. Everything is electric. And at the same time, what are they doing? They're giving us no additional supply of energy. I believe that we should have an LNG facility in Ireland. An argument I had recently with Leo Varadkar was the fact that Fine Gael put together a commission to look at this whole energy, this whole question about energy security. They came back and said we should have an LNG facility, a publicly owned LNG facility. When I highlighted that to Mr. Varadkar, that his own party, that they have come up with this. And at the same time, he's saying, no, we shouldn't have an LNG facility. So, I mean, would people get their act together and sing off the same hymn sheet and realize we do need energy security? We can't be over-reliant on France and England to give us power, because the lights will go out. And stopping people, for instance, of using solid fuel turf, if it's what's readily available to them and if that's what their family used to heat themselves, it's an awful thing to tell people, well, we're going to stop you of doing that. Ireland has always done their best. Ireland is a very good country, in my opinion, for protecting our environment. If you look at what happens in places like China and North America, look what's happening to our rainforest. I mean, we are a good nation for doing our best at all times. But now we're being asked to become the leaders in Europe and the leaders in the world with regard to carbon reduction. And what I'm saying is we can't afford to do it in the way and at the speed that the government are now asking us quite simply because they're being dictated to by the Green Party, because for their own political survival, then it's a case of, well, we better do, like Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are after becoming more green than the Green Party. And they're all trying to outdo each other with green policies.
Yeah.
But what they're forgetting is the human beings who have to survive and who have to pay these additional taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And now you'll be sorry you asked me that this question, because I'm in a bit of a rant now. So
No, no, it is good to talk about it. But in relation to the exchange of words that ye had a couple of days ago, you said that you think that Leo Varadkar looks down his nose at you. And then, first of all, why do you think that?
Well, you see, some politicians, and like, I believe everybody is equal, and I believe that we're all the exact same, and people who are elected, no other person has a bigger, how would we say, right to being right than anybody else. But some people inside the Dáil, and I'm not talking about anybody in particular, but some people have an attitude problem.
Okay.
In other words, they think they're better than everybody else, and they think they're smarter than everybody else. And in other words, they get notions about themselves. And I've seen it inside here. I always remember this thing of, I wasn't here that long, maybe a couple of years, and there was a particular minister at the time. And I'd always have my manners when I'd meet people, and especially somebody who's here longer than you are, and especially somebody who will say is further up the chain than you. And there was this one particular minister. Every time I used to meet him, I'd always say, "Hello, minister, how are you?" And he'd never answer me, never. And one night, and it was late at night, and you know, I suppose maybe I was a bit cranky, and I was walking along the corridor, and this minister was coming against me. And I sort of got this idea in my head, and I was very pleasant. I had a smile on my face, and I said, "Hello, minister, how are you?" And he kept walking. But if he did, I took one quick look around, and there was no one else around. I said, "Stop there 1 minute." And he stopped. And let's put it this way. I had a frank exchange of words with him, which started something like this. "Who in the name of God do you think you are?" You see? I said, "Since I came here, I've been nice to you. I've smiled at you. I've paid the time of day to you."
Mm-hmm.
"And you never once answered me." And I said, why? What makes you look down on me that I'm such an inferior person that you wouldn't? I mean, even if you don't like me, you could say hello, or you know, grunt, or do something." And I did say to him, I said, "A pig actually grunts. You know, if we poked at a pig, or a pig would look at you and would grunt at you. But this person wouldn't even make a grunt." And but I'll tell you one thing. I put him thinking a little bit that night.
Mm-hmm.
Because I sort of told him exactly from the balls of his toes up to the top of his head. I told him what I thought about him, his behavior, and he was a very well educated and a very well read man. But in my humble opinion, he was nothing but a thick, ignorant ball of a donkey. Because any person that would think that he was so smart,
yeah,
that he could pass a person without saluting him and bid him the time of day. But so things like that I don't like.
Yeah,
people
of course.
Thinking that they're better than somebody else.
Yeah.
And you know, if you meet real powerful people and people who are in big positions in life, you know, they're the people who are often nice altogether. And they have no attitude problem about themselves. Or they don't, like, they can see the bigger picture that every one of us are the exact same.
Exactly.
Every one of us are going to a hole. There is no person, if you're a pauper or a millionaire, everyone is the exact same.
Yeah.
And for some person to think that, "Oh, well, you know, I won't say hello to this person," that's all rubbish, like nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. I completely agree with you there. But that conversation that you had the other day as well, where, how was it taken? Because I've seen it in the news and I've seen articles where it's taken, or he's taken it, that you've made homophobic comments. But and I watched it, and I was watching it, and I was thinking, Jesus, what's he after saying? And the only thing that you said was, "Go away with your airy fairies."
Yes. Well, you see, I'll clarify one thing for
yeah.
you. And other eminent journalists in Ireland have said that the word has been used a couple of times in the Dáil. The word airy fairy has been used in the Dáil and the Senedd and the Houses of the Oireachtas, in other words, Oireachtas committees, 314 times. And isn't it awful unusual that when I use it once, now don't get me wrong, I've used it numerous times, but when I use it once in the context of a conversation or a debate with one individual, everyone seems to jump up, or should I say, because of his reaction, everyone jumps up and says, oh my God, like I would never, and I'm sure you know from this interview and from every interview I've ever done in my life, I would never purposely set out to offend, upset, or do anything to anybody. And when it comes to boys and girls, and girls and girls, or boys and boys, I don't want to know what people's business is. I don't want to know what people's private lives are and what they do. That to me is, it's like what we were talking about earlier on. That's a different, that's out there. That's it's different smart stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. And like, Trini Mac, I would never bring a person's private business into a public debate.
Mm-hmm.
Not for all the gold in China, like that wouldn't have anything to do with a political debate. But I often use the term airy-fairy ideas. And like, for example, we were talking about carbon. Like, it is an airy-fairy idea mm-hmm. for any political leader in Ireland to think that by 2030 we'll have gotten rid of every diesel engine and that people will be able to pull big loads with lorries and tractors operating with a battery engine. Like, that technology is not there yet and it won't be developed or affordable by 2030.
Yeah.
And any person that thinks that it will be is full of airy-fairy ideas. And I mean nothing insulting to any sector of society when I say that. But I will ask people who think that I was insulting.
Mm-hmm.
And like the little postcard and the person who wrote their lovely card to me yesterday, would they look at the other 314 times that the word airy fairy was used in the Dáil? Will they go back to those people and will they tell them that they were being homophobic, that they were being insulting, that they were being downgrading? Because like, just because I do it, it's insulting. The other 313 people, were they all fine so? And like this idea that, oh, it was never used before until now, and it was used in particularly to this one man. Nonsense. Yeah. Raving rubbish.
Yeah. But I just couldn't believe it because I saw the headline before I saw the video. And then I was waiting for some comment. And then you said what you said and it moved on. And I was thinking, well, where was the comment? And then his response, like, airy fairy, I think to the whole of Ireland has its meaning. And it's just away with the fairies. It's not, it's nothing to do with, I couldn't see the correlation with the two things. So,
But look, sure, I've had people contacting me saying, how dare I call a person a name inside the Dáil? Because again, they only half listened. They listened to news reports and they only half listened to it. And they, in other words, they added 2 and 2 when they got 7.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's always the case as well. Exactly. Like, whereas if you just read that headline like I did initially, you just hear the headline and you think, geez, what's he after saying inside in the Dáil? But when I watched the video, I was like, well, he didn't say anything. So.
Exactly. But look.
That's just people.
I'm not here to defend myself. The way I word it is that let people listen to the facts. But don't be like some journalists who won't let the facts get in the way of a good story. And like, people have written horrible things about me in the last couple of weeks now, and the last few days, and particularly about this. But like, again, do I take notice of it? Not at all.
Yeah.
And I always remind the journalist who writes sloppily and who writes non-factual stories and who just tries to put themselves up by putting some other person down. Is that what their parents worked hard for and sent them to school for and made sacrifices for them to go along to put themselves in a position of writing about people just, not being factual about it, but just to try and make the other person look bad, to create sensationalism and to focus hatred, and that's fine. And there's no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to take that on the chin then because, oh, well, that's politics.
I know,
but like, it's fine. If I did do something wrong, and oh my goodness, if I stood up and if I purposely insulted somebody or said something nasty or dirty, of course you should be called out for it. And of course you should be made apologize. And to people who've said to me that, oh, of course you should apologize. Should I be the biggest hypocrite in the world if I apologized? Because I'm not responsible for the interpretation that another person takes out of something. Mm-hmm. If a person doesn't understand a word or a mannerism or something, that's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And if a person is so uptight about something that they perceive it to be against them when it's actually not, I'm not responsible for that. And the journalists that write about it, they should act responsibly. You know?
Yeah, of course. That, I mean, that's true. You can't, you, if you've not done anything wrong or said anything purposely, which you could see in the video, the minute he said it, you were the face of confusion. So obviously, just looking at your face, you could see there was no intent there. But anyways, moving on from that, and a few more questions from other people, more lighthearted questions. Somebody wants to know, where do you get your caps?
Quills, woolen markets in Killarney. India inside there always takes care of me.
Oh.
Hats of Ireland make the hats, and I like them.
Does it ever come off your head? Do you take it off when you're going to sleep?
What should I do? Yeah. Well, I say, no, I've always wore caps. So just 1 second.
No, you're all right.
I'll ring you back in a couple of minutes, Janja. Okay. Sorry, no.
No, you're fine.
I just...
Another question is, how many funerals do you go to a year? And is it true that you use your own colour pen for the condolences book?
I've read that. And like, again, absolute nonsensical nonsense. I think it was a journalist who was trying to poke fun out of me that actually wrote that.
Right.
One thing, I've never in my life been at a funeral of a person that I didn't know,
right,
that I didn't have a connection with, or that I wasn't friends with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Very sadly, an awful lot of what I do is health related. And people might come to me when they're starting out on a journey of illness. And if I don't know that person, I mightn't be long getting to know them. And I'd like to think that we go on the journey together. It could be, the family members could be looking for carers allowance, they could be looking for a medical card, assistance with hospital appointments, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when that person then, as is inevitable, sadly, sometimes they pass away, it would be the height of bad manners. It would be very awkward not to go and be with the family because you've been with them all along. And there's a great comfort in meeting people that have been working with you and assisting you. And, you know, journalists, again, a lot of them, which are maybe they have no friends themselves, they don't get it that a person has an awful lot of friends,
mm-hmm,
an awful lot of people that you'll be connected with. And that's why I would go to say goodbye to people.
Yeah.
And it's part of life, and it's part of being friendly. It's part of being in a community, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And my next question, and I'll leave it at this question, is will you ever go for Taoiseach?
Well, maybe I'd be doing good if I'd be able to hold on to the position I have. when people say about, oh, will you go for this position or this job or that job, always remember, when you're in politics, whether it's local or national, it's the people who are your bosses. If the people of Kerry want me, they can have me because they can vote for me. If they don't want me at any time that they say that, well, we don't want you, we don't like you, we don't support you anymore, well, they're the bosses and it's their choice. And one thing I will say about politics is when you see what is happening in the Ukraine at the moment, and when you see Russia,
mm-hmm,
when we give out about democracies, you have to look at what's happening over there and think that, well, isn't democracy great?
Yeah.
Isn't it great to have leaders who are elected, whether you like them or not? And a while ago, I was complaining and giving out about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Greens. While I might give out about their policies, while I might give out about their governance, I absolutely appreciate, believe in, and am fully committed to the fact that we are so thankful that we have a democracy, that we have a political process, that the people are the bosses,
yeah.
The people on the ground, they are our ruling, governing guide. And so I can only be here for as long as the people want me to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I humbly appreciate it. I like the job. I hope I give a good service. I will always try my best. I will always do everything I can to help people. And the day then that I won't run and that I won't be before the people is if I felt that I wasn't able to keep doing what I do in the level that I do it at. In other words, I would never run if I thought, oh, I'm not good enough now to do what I used to do.
Yeah.
Like, we'll say, for instance, Monday night, I was doing clinics in South Kerry, which so for people who know Kerry, it was Blackwater, Sneem, Castle Cove, Cahardanel, Waterville, Master Geehy, Ballinskellig, Port McGee, Villinshoyland, and Carrisavine. And that was that night. And at the same time, like I left Villinshoyland at 12:30 or 1 o'clock on Monday night. And at the same time, at 8 or 9 o'clock, I was here in Dublin the following morning. And like the day that I couldn't do that,
yeah,
or not be able to do it, well, then I won't try to do it because I'll say to the people, right, I'm not able to do that now anymore. So I won't be asking you to support me anymore. But as long as I think I can do it and that I'm able to do it, I would like to do it if I'll be given the opportunity.
Yeah. Michael, you're some man. And thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. I know we had a couple of communication difficulties,
yeah,
of all of which I'm sure are my fault.
Yesterday was my fault anyways.
but we got there in the end anyway. And we have a lovely, pleasant way of doing the interview, and I appreciate that very much. And could I just say to all the people who are abroad,
mm-hmm,
I hope for two things. I hope that you'll always be lucky and always be happy, because that's one thing we never got to discuss too much was luck. In life, luck has an awful lot to do with it, because sure, you could be very smart, you could be very intelligent, and you could step out in front of the bus and get knocked down. So like, luck has an awful lot to do with life. And if we're lucky, you can get away with a lot. And I love to see young people getting on and young couples starting out. I'd always remind people that are away, don't forget about us. If it's possible, I'd always try to canvas people to come home. and I'm not interfering with your business or anything, but like the people that are abroad, don't have to think, well, Ireland is a no-go zone for us.
No.
Like I had uncles and aunties who left Ireland and who sadly didn't come home. They stayed in America. But I always think, well, what would it have been like, if they could have been here and had their families here? But I know that can't happen all the time. But all I'm saying is to young people, don't shut it down. Don't pull down the shutter and say, we're never going back to Ireland. Like, maybe opportunities would arise. And keep an open mind is the way I'll put it.
Ah, we will. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I think most of us will come back eventually. Most of us will.
Well,
eventually.
Well, that's good. That's good. Make balls of money and bring it all back to Ireland.
Exactly. There's no fear of us anyway. Thanks so much, Michael. All the best.
Thanks for having me with you. Yeah.
No, thanks for taking the time, because I know you're so busy, but thank you.
No problem.
Okay.
No problem.
That is it for this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you in the next one. Bye!